Hello, everyone. We're here to start our workshop regarding the IDB Senior Research Engagement Opportunities of 2021. The project we are talking about today is the metrological evaluation of lung ultrasound using virtual vector machine for diagnosis of acute respiratory distress syndrome. And we plan for today two presentations. The first one will be that one that's already on the screen. Wave simulation tool, and the presenter, the main speaker is Thiago Dourado from Imetro, and I'm also as a second speaker, but I will just help if you have any doubt and problem, but Thiago will be in charge of making the presentation. Just after that, we will have a topic on machine learning, and our invited speakers are Wexon Rocha from Imetro and David Chin from NIST. We are free to use the whole time we have. We reserved a slot of 2 hours, but I guess not be necessary to use all this time. But if it's necessary, you can take that. We will record, as I mentioned, this meeting, and we will make it available for everyone who would like to see it afterwards. All right, I would like you to close your mic during the presentation, just to let the presenter more free to make his speech. And I'm planning to make a session of questions after the second presentation. All right. So we just see Thiago's presentation first, then Wergson and David's one. And after that, we can start with some questions if we like. All right. So thank you so much for attending this meeting today. And I give the floor to Thiago. You can start your presentation now. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Rodrigo. Good afternoon, everyone. Let's go. Hi, colleagues. My name is Thiago Costa Dourado. I am civil engineer with a master's degree in geophysics and PhD in civil engineering too. I am a technologist research at the Imetro, and I work together with the coordinator of this project, Professor Rodrigo Pereira Barreto da Costa Félix. And the name of this presentation, ultrasonic modeling using the CalWave package for assessment of different acute respiratory distress syndromes, OARDS scenarios. Me, Rodrigo, speaker two. Let's go. Then here I present to you a summary of this presentation. The idea is make a general presentation of LABUS, our laboratory in Imetro. First, ultrasound records and COVID-19. Before ultrasound with modeling support, when we can. Objective of internship Sena, the first phase. Present introduction, K-wave and modeling steps, and proposal for creation computational scenarios for typical ARDS. Okay? Our proposal of this short presentation is to talk about a little about activities in Imetro, our laboratory. Here we work in the two areas, health area and the industrial area, applies in ultrasound. In half areas, we have worked physiotherapy, we have a patent file, licensed technology, we have starting process of being create, diagnosis ultrasound company with an incubate project too. We intend to scale calibration equipment, we have granted patent too, okay. In industrial area, we have working biodiesel manufacturing and monitoring, to patent filed, and it says tests in metals, polymers, cementitious materials, steel for civil construction too. We work with woods, rocks too. Understand? Then the first record is ultrasonic COVID-19. In the first months of the pandemic of COVID-19, we observed that ultrasound was one of the main imaging tools to support the diagnosis, okay? Thus, we began to survey the main works in order to understand how ultrasound was being applied, yeah? There in March, yeah, to 2020, okay, or that. Okay. When? Ultrasound with modeling support. When? In general, the test is ultrasound, easy to perform. However, in certain applications, more physical knowledge experience may be required from the performer interpretation by technicians. We have attention to the danger of natural traps. Sometimes we think something, but never. It's like we think. In this case, sometimes it's necessary implementations of acoustic modeling. It's ever recommended, sometimes recommended, okay? And the purpose of the stage working in Senam, it's creation of acoustic loss art scenarios from computer simulation using CalWave software, okay? The idea is that scenarios will be created in typical lung geometries, okay? Regions of different impedances will be configured into software CalWave. In the end, key questions. How machine learning can help interpret ultrasound signals? The general idea is this. Now I will mention some key topics to introduce the CalWave. This software CalWave is a third party, open source, MATLAB toolbox designed to time domain simulations of acoustic wave propagations in 1D, 2D, or 3D dimensions. This toolbox has a wide range of functionality, but it's core in advanced numeric model that can explain linear or non-linear wave propagations. Okay. It allows arbitrary distributions of heterogeneous materials parameters and Poiré law acoustic absorptions. The difficulties or this is possible into CalWave. Basically, the creations of simulations in CalWave consist of four stages of parameters, variables definitions. First is spatial information, depending on the number of intent dimensions, 1, 2, 3 dimensions. Define medium propagates, such density, acoustic velocity, set source position, set the position of the receiver. Understand? This is the four stages for implementation simulation CalWave. Another viewing scheme flow chart, CalWave, define grid, the grid, medium, position for source, sources, and peculiar source, peculiar receiver. For example, if you want one source, two source, three source, one receiver, two receiver, three receivers, understand? Characteristics like directionality of sensors, it's possible created into CalWave too. Okay. Here I present the little examples two dimensions. These examples we carry out in my PhD thesis. Understand? This example we have small rectangles here, small rectangles into the big rectangles, understand? For analyzing the answers of signals propagation into the medium. Okay, here we have two type signals, tonipuri and chirps, chirps when we have some frequencies into the signal, source signal, understand? We can analyze the snapshots. Né? Snapshots are for, we have four snapshots in the instant moment. Né? This moment, we read. Né? We see the propagation wave in the inner of material. Okay. Well, here né, we have the general geometries of the lung. Percent. We take these models in internet, and from formats, né, common formats, PNG or JPG. The idea is import né, this geometry in K-Wave, né, this geometry, the real geometries, input different impedances. Né, we define né, different impedances, compare with literature, real case in literature, and create some simulations, same simulations for take it to artificial intelligence, né, the machine learning works. The some data, different data for analyze. In the end, finally, the idea is to create best simulated scenarios for to assist in the interpretations of real reads. Né? The general idea, the end idea. Okay. Rodrigo, I finished my presentation. Thank you for time.
Okay, Charles, thank you. I wrote down some points that I think it would be better to clarify and also to explain to our assistant, and I will do that just after the second presentation, okay? So Charles, okay. Thank you so much for your presentation here, and now I will give the floor to Gregson and Dave Ching in sequence. You can stop sharing your screen now, Charles, if you like.
Okay.
And now, Werksel, it's up to you with your nice David, hats.
Okay. David has the last presentation. David, can you please open the presentation for us?
Who?
It's me. It's me.
Oh, David. Okay, David.
Yeah, right. Yeah. He has the last version.
Perfect. Go ahead.
Can everybody see this?
Can you put in the beginning?
Yeah, sorry about that. You are now getting a very fast preview of our entire presentation. There we go.
Okay, should I start, Rodrigo?
Yeah, whenever you want.
Okay. Hey everyone, good afternoon. I mean, in Brazil, it's good afternoon. My name is Werkson, I'm from Metro, and David and I will give the presentation about some machine learning, some work that we did together. And the idea for this presentation is show some different kind of machine learning that we can use in this project. The idea for the project, it's used for images, but we are not show any application the image, but the idea is just use the machine learning. It doesn't matter if the data is image or not, we can use the machine learning that we are gonna discuss here, okay? David's from NIST and I'm from EMET. The talks from the presentation, I'm gonna start a little bit, talk about some definitions. We are gonna talk a little bit about data, it's the new gold. We can see a lot of reports in the news about this, and we're going to discuss this. It's a very important concept that I think it's important we can talk about that. And after that, we are going to say, how can we generate data? I mean, good data for machine learning. Because if you don't have good data, the result that we will get in the machine learning, it's not good. This is very important. Dave are going to talk a little bit about the NIST program, about this kind of how can you generate good data, okay? And after that, Thiago told us the idea about the machine learning. We need to understand when we use the machine learning, we need to try to answer some questions. And Thiago told us in his presentation about how can we machine learn from the data? Basically, from machine learning, what did you get? This is the idea, and we are going to talk about that. And after that, we are going to show some examples, and after is the conclusion. Okay, for some definitions, the first definition we have this name data mine, and I got from this paper here. Data mining refers to the application of algorithm for extract patterns from data. Basically, what we understand about this definition. In machine learning, we have two big groups. We have supervised methods and unsupervised methods. What does these methods mean? Basically, for a data mine, we are trying to find cluster. We are trying to find the patterns in the data sets. It's very common, the cluster analysis, we can use these two algorithms, PCA and Kohonic. And we use this machine learning algorithm. I mean, this data mine algorithm, we try to see pattern and we can see different results in some graph. And I'm gonna show now this kind of graph. They can add another one too. The first graph that David showed, the idea is the result for Kohonic cluster analysis. In this idea, we can see many different colors. And in this result, we can say, okay, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 groups in the data. We can see this kind of result. This Kohonic showed to us. For our case, when you guys will do the simulation in Senam, we are gonna have many different scenarios. And if we use Kohonic, we can get this kind of results. And see here, if we have 5 scenarios, we are gonna have these 5. Of course, if we get the separation among all scenarios, we got some kind of this graphic over here, okay? And the idea about the cluster analysis and the data mine, can we put in the next one, Dave, please? And this is the idea that I put in this figure. We have here many different apples, and we are trying to understand how many groups that we have. And we use one cluster, we have one machine learning, we use one algorithm to see, okay, in this data set, we have two groups. Okay, this is the idea. Okay, next, please. And this is another graph that we can use the PCA. In PCA, we can see 3 groups in this kind of graph. The idea for this data mining, this slide, is show that if you use one kind of machine learning, you get one specific graph that we can understand your results. In Kohonic, I show to use the maps, we call maps, Kohonic maps, that we can see the groups. In this case, we can see the 3D graph that we can see the output from PCA. But doesn't matter the algorithm that we can use, we can understand, we can see the pattern or how many graphs, groups that we can get. The next one. And this is just one animation that you can see different angles, and we can see if we have how many groups that we have. Next, please, Dave. Okay, and now we are start to learn a little bit more about machine learning. In the first definition that I told, I talk about the data mine. Basically, we are trying to see how many groups. Second part in machine learning, when you discover how many groups that you have in data set. When you get the unknown data set, you put this information in your model, and the model will tell you, these data sets belong in the specific groups. For example, if you have five groups, if you get one unknown sample, one unknown information, basically you got one information and put your machine learning. And the machine learning will classify this information for you in one group. This is the idea from this slide. This is the idea from machine learning. And cluster analysis in the slide before, we are not classify the unknown samples. We classify when we use this machine learning, when we want to predict something. In our case for this product, we are gonna predict new image. We are gonna use some kind of algorithm in machine learning that we can see, okay, this unknown image belongs in the specific scenario. This is the idea. Okay, then you can go. And you can just put. Here in this first slide, here in this first part, only for you to understand what I said. First part, we need to build the model. We create the data set in the left, and we create one correlation with one property. In our case, we are going to have class. For example, scenario one, scenario two, scenario three, scenario four, doesn't matter how many scenarios. And we are going to create, we are going to do one correlation among the scenarios and the data. When we do this, we get the new samples, we get the new object, we get the new information, and put this B test in the model, and the model are gonna tell, okay, these new informations belongs in the specific class. This is the idea about the machine learning. This is the idea that we have to use in this project. Create the model, and after that, you try to predict new samples, new images, new scenarios. Try to see if the model is good, means good, if the model does a good classification. We have many different mathematical parameters and metrics that we can do the evaluation for the model. And I think we are going to discuss here a little bit. You can keep it there. In this case, and the part C is applying the model. Basically, the idea, we create the model in the bid, we test in the model, and after that, we apply the real sample, I mean, unknown samples, okay? Part A, we build the model. Part B, we test the model with the sample that we know. We know this sample belongs to scenario A, for example. We test and check. We know the second sample belongs to the scenario two. We test and check. This is the part B. And after that, when we create, when we test the model, we can say, okay, our model is ready. We can use this to apply the real situation. I mean, the unknown sample that we have no idea about that. And we want to classify this new data. Okay, this is the number C, applying the model. This is the idea that I'm talk about in this slide. Next slide, please. And deep learn, it's very common we hear about the deep learn. Basically, deep learning only for you understand, we have many different models. And when we have these layers, basically the deep learning you need to understand. You can classify and you can predict some different properties. But the deep learning, we have this multiple number of nonlinear transformation. Basically, we have the complicated algorithm. This is the idea. And you need to have the cluster, the good computer to do the classification. The idea it is deep learning. You have many different layers in the algorithm. It's not simple algorithm that you classify some data. In this case, I'm showing many different layers. It means equations that we can classify the data in cat or dog. But this is the idea, okay? When you hear about deep learning, think about, okay, nonlinear transformation, complicated algorithm that you can classify the data. This is the idea about the deep learning. The next one, Dave. And the artificial intelligence, I think you can put a play in this video, Dave. I think it's one video. I don't know if you play or not. No, it's okay. But anyway, When you talk about the artificial intelligence, basically I put the science and the engineering of making intelligent machine, especially computer system, by reproducing human intelligence through the learning, reason, and self-adaptation. What do I mean in this slide? The idea is when you learn something from the machine, we can apply, we can mimetize, we can try to be human. This is the idea about the artificial intelligence. In this case, I put here one video that this machine can learn and can do some activities from human. For example, play soccer, running, jumping. Anyway, the machine learn, and after that, the machine will repeat what the machine learned. This is the idea about the artificial intelligence. And now in the next slide, we can try to see all these definitions together. Artificial intelligence is the big groups. Deep learning, it's the small group. I mean, it's the machine learn. It's more complicated algorithms and do the machine learn. And we have the idea about the data mine. It's the cluster analysis. And the big group, the total, it's the artificial intelligence. Okay, this is the, like a resume, the synthesize, the... How do I say that? The abstract, the resume from all these definitions together. Deep learning is the small group, machine learning is the second group, and the artificial intelligence is the big group. And next. And after the last, the principle for us, because we work in the National Institute of Metrology. And metrology is the science of measurement. And when you do measurement, you need to do this in the correct way. And with this result, with this measurement, we can apply this information in the machine learning algorithm. This is the idea. Okay, David, we can go. Okay, now I'm gonna talk about data. It's the new gold. Okay, go. And I think you can. Okay. Basically, here I mean just all the time. We can hear that we produce a lot of data in your house, in your work. All the time you are producing data. When you get your phone, we start to play, we see you are producing data all the time. When you produce data, people the company, they can learn from you from this data. If they get this data, they understand. When do you go to home? When do you eat it? When they understand a lot about you or about the organization. The idea about the data is the new gold, because now we can process all this big information and we can predict something about you. For example, Amazon. When you go in the Amazon and you try to buy a shoe, all the time you are looking for one specific shoe. And the machine there, the machine learning algorithm, they understand, okay, this person is trying to see specific shoes. He learned from your search in the platform. And all the time you get some advertise about these shoes because the machine learned there, learn from you and try to sell you, try to send you advertise. This is why I'm saying here, data is the new gold. And it is very important to understand how do you use the data. And now it's very important in all the world. To think about the methods, it's important to, here I'm showing some kind of application in the agriculture. People can predict, okay, when do I plant? When do I collect I do my plantation. When do you, I collect? I mean, all this information we can process and we can see when and how I can do some change in my plantation. This is the idea here, okay? And in this case, we can get data from satellite, all this stuff. And the next slides, basically I put reference data. The reference data is very important. David will talk a little bit about the reference data. Reference data, it means we know a lot of data that we have, we cannot trust for the data because you don't know about the data, okay? for building machine learning data mining to use machine learning algorithm, you have to trust in the data. This is why we say reference data to create the models. When you get the reference data, data that we can trust, when you put this in the machine learning, you get good results. If you don't put that good data, I mean reference data, all the results in the machine learning, it's not good. It's untrusted. This is the idea. The idea is you need to have good data to get good machine learning result. If you don't have good data, you never get good result. Doesn't matter what kind of machine learning algorithm that you use. You can use deep learning, you can use it. Doesn't matter. You never get good result if your data that you use to build your model, it's not good. Okay, this is the idea here that I'm talking about. Next slide, please. And now, how can I redo this? Okay, I put here, I understand here, everybody it's coming from different formations, some engineers, some chemistry, some, enfin, many different information. And here I put some different general information that how can I obtain this data? First, when you get trust measurement, I know what I'm doing in the laboratory and I believe that I know how to use the instrument and I got good results. This is the first one. Second, when we use the appropriate instruments from the goal, okay, you use the correct instrument to do your measurement and you got good results. The another thing is important, you have to use your instrument in the correct way. Your instrument needs to be calibrated. This is very important. The operator needs to be good. They need to understand what they are doing there. And specifically in chemists, we can use the reference material or standard reference material to get good data, I mean good results, okay? This reference material and standard reference material, it's more specific in chemistry. The others in all different applications. When we get this data, we can get good result and we can build confidence, we can create good machine learning algorithm. This is the idea. And next day. And here the idea that I told you, we have trust measurement, we can create the model and all the results that we can get in the model, they're gonna be good. Next, please. And here I put some matrix. We can, doesn't matter the instrument, we have here big table that we can organize the data and we get all this data and we put this in machine learning and we are gonna learn about the data. And next then. Okay, now I think David is gonna talk a little bit about how NIST does this. Trust data in a specific way, he will talk about the biology. Dave, you can start.
Okay, so one of the things that we're pushing in this, in metabolomics in particular, is this idea of moving from standard reference materials that are certified for particular composition, moving to materials and data sets that are certified for their spectral data. If you have, if you want to, you can go to srn.nist.gov or whatever the equivalent is in your country to buy our certified reference materials, our standard reference materials, and you'll get a certificate that says, you know, this urine or this blood contains so much of this, so much of that, so much of this other thing. And if you can, if your process can measure that concentration, you know that your measurement process works. But one of the things that's becoming increasingly important is having non-targeted measurements. Just take this biological material and stick it into an NMR spectrometer or into GC-MS or something and just get out the profile. And sometimes this profile is more important than what than the compositions of the known components of the material. For instance, this is a plot showing principal components analysis, which Erickson talked about earlier. There are three blood samples. One is from known diabetics, one is from people with known high triglycerides, and then, normal people, whatever normal means. And you can see that using these NMR spectra, you can separate these three groups pretty well. So we don't necessarily need to know exactly what component is responsible for these separations. All we need to know is that there is something in the model, or something in the plasma that is responsible for this. And so you can use PCA to do this. You can use Kahonen maps to do these separations. But the point is, we don't necessarily need to know what's in them. We just need to know what the profiles are. So of course, this gets you into this hairy position of, if your research focuses on non-targeted profiles, then reference materials should have those non-targeted profiles. So we published this paper a bunch of years ago, where we did some, we had some NMR spectra. These are actually not biological materials. These are laboratory generated mixtures of various substances of metabolic significance, glucose, adenine, a whole bunch of stuff. The idea is, we take data from an interlaboratory study, and the idea was to try to find which labs are the ones that do the best measurements, which ones are the ones that maybe there are some problems and we should not include the measurements. Is this a laboratory problem? Is this a sample problem? We don't know. We didn't try to answer that question. But the idea is that we want to get a set of data, and maybe someday we will be selling this as a reference data. We want to get a set of data that's the best possible. So we have all of these measurements. Each of these sets of measurements is of the same thing. So I have these labels S2 and S3. I'm sorry, they're very small. But the idea is that both of these, each of these sets are the same thing. This is everybody's measurement of S2, everybody's measurement of S3. And we can calculate a transformation and get a distance for everybody's spectrum from everybody else. We fit those to a distribution. We do some scoring, and the idea is that we have found an outlier. This is shown only for samples S2 and S3. We can take these per sample scores, and we can do some modifications and get the entire projected statistical distance. And the idea is that we have now found three laboratories that don't fit into the consensus. And so then we build a consensus data set from the remaining ones. And it turns out that the ones that are removed actually make a lot of sense. These two are measured in the spectrometer at a different set of conditions. So those measurements are not comparable. That's not the laboratory's fault. They're just under different conditions. Measurements aren't comparable. And then this laboratory was previously observed by a human to have shifts in the spectra. So something happened. It's not their fault, but we're not going to put them in the consensus. And you can do a different transformation on these. You can generate this plot right here. This little circle shows the consensus, distribution, and these are the three outliers, the laboratories that are removed from consensus. So what you could do is, since this was an interlaboratory study with very controlled samples, you can do this exact experiment with the same samples. You could buy them from us. Well, these aren't for sale, but if it was a different set, you could buy them from us, reproduce the study, and then you too would have a dot on your distribution. So you would know how reliable your measurement process was as compared to the interlaboratory study. So back to Erickson.
Okay, and the idea that I told in the beginning of the presentation, what does the data say? Okay. The idea is here in this slide, you can go there. Okay. The idea, when we are going to start the project, we are going to start a model. The first thing is to ask one question about the data. Here I'm showing we have many variables, we have many data sets. The first thing is define the question. Okay, what do we want to learn from the data? This is the thing. In our case, in this project, we are going to try to predict when we get the new data set, if we are going to fit in this scenario that Thiago told to us. Okay, when we don't have one information, basically we are going to see, okay, this belonging in which scenario? The people have COVID, people don't have COVID, or people maybe they have or not. This is the idea. We just need to ask one question before we start the study. And here I put some examples. For example, if the people that have diabetes, the next day, if the people, how many soil are there, and how much sugar do I have in my soda, for example. Go next. Basically, we have to extract knowledge or insight from the data to try to understand, to answer the question that we did. Next. I think now it's you, Dave, examples. Yeah? And now I think, Dave, you're going to talk a little bit more about some examples. And after I can go back, but you know.
So this first example is trying to determine physical chemical properties of petroleum derivatives using GCMS and chemimetric methods with uncertainty estimation. The idea here is we want to be able to predict the physical properties of fuels and we need attach an uncertainty to this. I don't have a slide talking about this, but part of the reason that we wanted to do this is we were working with the FAA to look at certification for alternative fuels. The short version of that explanation is the certification process is very time intensive, labor intensive, and also depending on what fuel you're using, it might be very capital intensive as well. So being able to circumvent that process is something that would be very useful as fuel stocks transition from petroleum to alternative streams. The experimental process is we have a sample. We are going to acquire data using GCMS. We are going to simultaneously measure some property using the ASTM method, density, viscosity. There's a list, you'll see it later. We are going to compare the, use a computer to compare the GCMS profiles with the ASTM measured properties, dump this into a model. And then the idea is to be able to make a decision about which model is the most reliable, and then produce the physical chemical properties with some estimate of reliability. And here are the samples. Here's the list of physical properties for characterization, density, viscosity, this property called the pore point, the acid number and base number. Basically, these are very common properties that are of interest for fuels. If you want to have a drop-in replacement for transportation purposes, you need to be able to match all of many of these properties. This table here shows the materials that we used. We had a bunch of NIST standard reference materials and a bunch of commercially available jet fuels and gasolines. This is the list of types. So we have all kinds of fuels, gasoline, kerosene, residual fuel oil, which you is more appropriate for shoveling than pumping. You note in some cases we weren't able to get measurements. We outsourced this to an outside laboratory to do these measurements, and you know, the residual fuel oil, for instance, is very difficult. So we didn't always get all of these properties. So the point is, we have a physical property and a corresponding GCMS profile, and then we applied both a linear and a nonlinear model to try to estimate these properties from the GCNS profiles. So here's that result. So on the left column, we have a linear model estimating the property in question. On the right, we have a nonlinear model. The linear model is partial least squares. The nonlinear is support vector machine. And all of these estimates have uncertainty measurements on them. One of the things you can see is that the support vector machine, the nonlinear model, usually reproduces the physical property very well, but the uncertainty is very small. And sometimes there's one single horrible outlier. The linear model generally represents the there's a lot more scatter, but the uncertainty measurements are higher and the linear model can be a lot more honest. You see this single point, these two points measurements correspond to each other. This is because there was a profile that was in the training, in the test set, not the training set, and it was very different from the others. And so the support vector machine has no idea what to do with this, but the linear model tries its best and gives you a much more honest answer. I have this list of problem substances. The issues sometimes crop up in machine learning when you have a breadth, but not necessarily a depth of samples. The commercial gasoline, we didn't have very many examples of gasolines. You can see on the previous slide, we had residual oil, diesel oil, kerosene. So if you have a lot of samples that are replicated or of similar classes, the machine learning model is going to do a very good job of predicting the properties for those. It's going to have a lot of trouble if there isn't very much replication. Also, one of the problems is one of these materials is a crude oil, and crude oil is kind of weird because it's like gas. It's like diesel oil dissolved in gasoline, which it has, as far as the GCNS profile, it has the properties both of gasoline and of diesel, and the models can get confused by that. And then we have some questions like, is the model overfit? I had mentioned the repeatability of data. There's still a lot of the conclusion of the study was everything works, but there's still some questions to be addressed. We need a bigger library. But one of the interesting things about machine learning is that so this plot shows an example profile. This shows what the active variables were. This is what we were training the model on. The different colors are different. Chemicals, alkanes, you see alkanes, benzene, naphthalene, and these materials called, sometimes called FAMEs. So these are what are in the model. And what you can do with machine learning is you can look at which of these components are actually responsible for making properties, giving properties the values that they have. This is what's called model loadings. So if you look at the PLS model, for instance, these components that are most responsible for the, for instance, the high temperature density are these high molecular weight low molecular weight, but high retention time. And you see the same thing for this for the pore point. If you look at the viscosity, there's the low retention time. These are more associated with gasoline, which is a thinner fluid. If you have ever tried to, if you ever looked at these things, gasoline is very smooth. Diesel fuels and tend to be very thick, like motor oil. So these things more associated with those heavy fuels may give you high viscosity. And you see sort of a similar thing with the support vector machine. So the point of this is that if you are using images instead of these GCNS profiles, you can you can use machine learning to look at what components of the image actually are responsible for the machine learning algorithm's diagnosis. So if you're looking at cancer, you can say where the cancer is. If you're looking at COVID, you can say what are the features in the lungs that are responsible for the diagnosis of COVID. So conclusions of this study, we use linear and nonlinear methods with uncertainty to estimate physical properties. And basically we got good agreement. Everything worked most of the time. We did a similar study with the same set of data for unsupervised classification of these fuels. The objective here was to build chemometric models for unsupervised classification. Again, this is sort of the question, like, how can we determine if a fuel is going to be suitable as a drop-in replacement in transportation? And this is a more general holistic approach. Does the new fuel chemically look like the old fuel? Here's the list of materials analyzed. This should look very similar to the table that we showed previously. Lots of diesels, some gasolines, and some crude oils thrown in, and jet fuel as well. We used the two techniques that Werrickson discussed earlier, principal components analysis and Kohonen maps. So these are the PCA results. You can see that most of the materials on the PCA plot fall onto this disk here. That means they're all very similar to each other. And then there's these two materials, 2772 and 73, that are fall away from this disk. These are the weird ones. These are biodiesels, which are chemically very different from petroleum products, which is kind of what you would expect. Looking on just two dimensions, you see a similar thing. All the kerosene-like fuels fall together. The jet fuels and the SRM kerosene, the biodiesel, of course, falls very far away from the others. So you can see, if you were interested in aviation, for instance, anything that fell into this ellipse right here, the jet fuel ellipse, would be something that you could possibly use as a drop-in replacement. These are mostly aliphatic and aromatic hydrocarbons. Basically, they're all chemically similar.
If you click it now.
Yeah, there we go. Yes, they're all chemically similar. The jet fuels, these two kerosenes, and the gasoline SRM. If we use the Kohonen map, which is a nonlinear classification method, on the left you see this thing called the U matrix. On this map, each of the training samples has its own domain on the map that it lives in, and we have three replicates of each of them. Can everyone hear me?
Yeah, I think you
closed. Yes, we can hear the screen.
Yeah, okay. I will get that back for you.
All right.
I think my docking station might have overheated. Okay, we have the screen share back?
Yep.
Okay. And my laser pointer is gone too. The map. Every training measurement has its own spot on the map where it lives. The map is colored according to the internode spectral distance. So every location on the map has a spectrum associated with it. as you go from node to node, if there's not much distance, there's not much difference in the spectrum at that node. So obviously, the three replicates of SRM1620C, they should all be very similar to each other. But then you see this wall come up as you move from one sample to another. And what you can see is that, say, for the jet fuels, they're all very similar to each other. And then there's this big wall as you move into the there's moderates as well as you move into kerosene, gasoline, and then over here are the biodiesels. So what you can do, what we did is we assigned one of three colors to each node in the map, depending on red is if it's red is if the node is similar to biodiesel, and we had some similarity measurement. Green is if it's similar to kerosene, and blue is if it's similar to diesel fuel. So what you see is here, the biodiesels are very different. So if you wanted to use biodiesel as a drop-in replacement for a transportation fuel, you would want to do some experimentation to make sure that it actually was reasonable, actually worked the way you expected it to work. The kerosenes form their own nice group with each other, and then the diesels also form their nice group. But there is there's less differentiation among the diesels and kerosenes than there is between the diesel kerosene and the biodiesel. So you can ask the question, how many classes do we have? Well, we have at least three. This other residual fuel oil is different from the others. You know, residual fuel oil is what they use in marine applications. It is nasty, thick stuff, very different from kerosene even. So maybe there's four. But anyway, the point of this is that if you did a measurement, you could see where where the fuel you measured landed on this map, and you could see whether it was appropriate as a replacement for fuels. So in conclusion, we showed that the combination of GCMS and the chemometric analysis can be used as a tool to differentiate petroleum, SRMs, and other fuels. And we successfully employed both the linear and nonlinear methods to perform pattern recognition here. Erickson, I think this one is yours.
Okay. Basically now, the idea is just to show more details in these two first examples. And now I'm going to just show the another application that we can do from machine learning. Here I'm going to go more fast, okay? In this application, basically here, because I used to work in the chemical science division at the Metro, and we can apply machine learning reference material because this division, they create certificate reference material, and we can apply this in this kind of work. Okay, David, just one paper about that. Okay, cool. Just only illustration.
I think you should be able to control it now. Try.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, let me see. I don't know how do I control this. Okay, here. Yeah. Okay, just one example. I'm not giving a lot of details. And basically use the machine learn to create the material reference. And the idea here is to try to say, hey, if you do your job, you can use many different chemometry machine learning in your work. This is the idea from this work here. And in this specific case, we use it to create these two certificate reference material. When we apply the machine learning, we can reduce the uncertainty. Basically here, we can got the two results. And when we apply the machine learning, we can reduce the uncertainty in this case, in these drugs, around 50%, in this case, about 30%. This is just one another application in the machine learning. This is the same idea, but here we did this with, we call robust method, robust PCA. David showed, and I told in the beginning, the classical PCA. The idea about the robust PCA basically changed a little bit the algorithm, and then we can apply. When you do the robust PCA or robust machine learning, if we have many outliers, we don't have a lot of trouble. The robust machine learning models can do better than classical machine learning when you have outlier. In this example, I just showed this that we did. And here's the normal PCA, and here 1, 2, 3, this robust PCA. And basically the idea here, the goal is to reduce the uncertainty for these drugs. And with this robust, we reduce about 10%. The others, we reduce less than 10%. This is the idea here. Another example, we apply in interlaboratory comparison. They already showed the one example. I'm not gonna explain it here, but just to show that we can apply in this kind of interlaboratory comparison, machine learning. Here, we showed some measurement, I mean, some electrodes in this case are similar, the others not similar. This is the idea in this slide. Here, we can build the platform. We can create software to do the machine learning. I think in this project, we don't have time to create some kind of algorithm. I mean, create one software that we can use the machine learning algorithm that we are going to apply in this project. But the idea here is see, we have this expertise to create software. I mean, get these algorithms, put it together, and give it to somebody else, an interface friendly that they can use. This is the idea for this slide. And the conclusion, we can use machine learning, many different activities. We are going to use in this project to predict the scenario from COVID. I mean, normal people, people with COVID, people, they are getting contaminated, suspect people, doesn't matter. This is the idea that we can be using this project. And again, thank you everyone for your time. Thank you, David, for sharing this presentation with me. And thank you, Rodrigo, to invite us. If you guys have some questions, we are here to answer. Thank you.
Great presentation. Thank you, Erickson and David. It's interesting to learn how the link should be done. Works, if you like to turn off your, or David, I don't know who is presenting now. If you would like to close your, stop sharing your screen, be better.
Hey, can you do this, Dave?
Yeah, give me just a sec.
All right. Okay, so it's good to know because it's quite clear the link between the first presentation from Thiago and yours. Basically, the message is stolen. That means that Thiago's duty is to provide good data. Without doing that, the machine learning application will not be, we will not have a good behavior. And the goal will not be achieved. So we now understand much better what is expected from the simulation. Thiago will work with Hugo there in Senna, and then how this data should be processed afterwards here in Metro and then in Nice as well. It's good. Yeah. I'd like to know if Ivan or Martin has some questions to do. I have a couple of them. Hugo as well, of course.
Yeah. And related to the data topic, at INTI we are working with synthetic data generation, using data augmentation, using GAN type generator networks. We are using this kind of metrics in order to evaluate the quality of these images. And I wanted to ask, the answer for me is yes, but I wanted to ask if do you think there is a future in data analysis for the aggregation of synthesized data created by another network, in this case, generative networks, as we are doing here at INDI?
David, do you want to answer?
Would you like to answer that?
Yvonne, I agree with you. I think the answer is yes. I think that you want to be somewhat careful with the use of artificially generated data. I'm sure, as you know, in other fields of machine learning, there are balancing tests like SMOTE and SMOOTINE that you can use to make sure that your data set is appropriately balanced between the different classes that you have. And there is a step of artificially generating data sets that goes into that. You do want to proceed with some caution when you do this, but as long as these artificially generated images bear, you know, some semblance to reality and are used to augment the reality that you have, I think that's perfectly fine.
Yeah. Just to complement the answer, basically, if you get the think about the concept of, about the machine learning, all these are going, they need to learn from something. If you get the real result, that they can learn better. If we get the simulate result that don't look like the real, we may get the not good answer when we get unknown samples, okay? This is the idea. Think about if we learn very well, doesn't matter the question that you can ask it, the model, they can answer in better way. But if you just put some data set there that it's very, very particular, when you get the real data set that you don't have in the simulate, in our case, it's very important to think about that too. Maybe the model cannot predict in the real situation. And David told, and we did one project before about to do the uncertainty, and we do the bootstrap, just try to simulate in to check this. And I remember a little bit that when we did a lot of bootstrap in the idea about the bootstrap, only for everyone to understand it, just create more sample, more data, okay? Just create more data from one real data set. And we didn't get good results when we did the bootstrap. Just that we need to be careful. In this project, because we are gonna do the simulate data, we need to be careful because maybe when we got the real sample, maybe the model will not give us good the result. Is one thing that we need to be careful.
Yeah, is there another point that I'd like to mention? I think it's also important to check out when we generate synthetic data. It's important to check out how the way those data were synthesized, if they are synthesized with no uncertainty or no variation, of course, it would be a better set of data because it will be, if they are all the same, it's not good. It's excellent in the case of training machine learning, but of course it's not real. It's quite far from what the reality came to us, because the reality from the measurement is the true value is unknown, and the result got from the measurement is something contaminated with many aspects. For instance, what lead to uncertainty and errors. So the synthesized data, that's one of the challenges that Thiago will have to face in the K-wave simulation, is how to introduce some variation, but some variation close to what the reality will bring to us, right?
Something and another thing that we can do, and to mix, get the simulation data plus and the real data from some data sets, database.
And you're right, you're right.
This and to create the good model. I think you should do this in this project. I think
it's part of the project to find some, we have already some repositories of data from LUS images. LUS is lung ultrasound, LUS images. And we use that both approach we will use in this project. But I have a question, two questions actually for Thiago. Is, of course, I know the answer, but I'd like you to also be known about that. Thiago, is it possible to insert linear sources of ultrasound in a K-wave model?
Yes, it's possible, not only linear, like curved too.
Surface
curve tool.
Yeah, just to explain what the question did, because we have different way to make an ultrasound to mentionate a body or a material or whatever. It can be a puntal, or just a point, points. Can be a linear, or as yeah. I asked there, linear, or uh-huh. a surface.
Surface
means that the size of the transducer is much bigger than wavelength.
Yes, yes.
And a point or monopole or point, that means that the size of this emitter is in the more or less the same range of the wavelength. And a linear is the same way, the same size in one dimension and much bigger in another dimension. Just to explain how.
Side to side.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, it's normal.
And it's how far? And another question is the modeling, the lung modeling you mentioned, Thiago. How is that so far? Had already the model or not already or what?
Okay. And in the moment in we defined the full geometry. Right? I show for all. And we begin to import into CalWave this the full geometry, and today we are studying our bibliography and research on others bibliography related the subject like propagates that characterize COVID and not COVID. We need to understand the propagates of velocity impedances, when we have a COVID-9 and non-COVID. It's important to understand. And we will need some conversations with a group of machine learning for define the best way to massively generate data. How we will generate this data easily the treatment, the processing before. Understand? This is the idea. Me and you, Hugo, the next month, we will analyze these situations, these etapes.
It's in that answer comes from my question to both Erickson and David can answer. Doesn't matter. Is there a minimum amount or number of original data to for each group you would like to classify to train or teach a machine?
Dave, do you want to start?
This is always a fraught question.
Philosophical question.
So the number that people like to throw around is around 20 members of each class. Obviously, in the work that we've done so far, we have not had that many. I am not sure if I have no idea if that's going to be an easy thing to get for this project. But The real answer to your question, Rodrigo, is as many as possible. Five you can probably do something with. 10 is better. 20 is even better.
A related question. Is there a kind of asymptotic amount, for instance? 5 is much better. 10 is much better than 2. 20 is as much better as 10 than 10 is from 5, no? Or there's a number that it doesn't matter if you have more elements, the learning process will be more or less the same.
Yeah. There is an asymptotic fall off. Exactly where that is application dependent. So you kind of have to figure that out. And one of the problems that we have in science, particularly the situation that we have with our standard reference materials, is that it's not like cat pictures on Facebook. There are billions of cat pictures on Facebook. We have dozens of gas chromatograms, this is all the situation. These are the situations that we find ourselves when doing scientific machine learning, is that we have we have very limited data sets. We have the data we have. And one of the things that we've been trying to do with these interlaboratory studies is to encourage people to get more data and more high precision data.
Let me give you a pitch about that. So.
It works less well than we would hope.
All right, great. Another point, the name of our project, there's a virtual vector machine in it. And the question for you, expert on that, virtual vector machine is a kind of machine learning, the opposite way, or they are the synonymous, or another answer?
I don't know. I took this name
from the internet. I saw an image representing artificial intelligence and machine learning, deep learning. So, and one of them is virtual vector machine. That's why I choose this name. I poked this name and put it into.
Vector machine, it's okay. David showed that we did one application. It supports vector machine.
Support vector machine. It's one kind of
algorithm. But virtual is the first time that I hear about
the all right, okay. No, it's just a matter of turning the vocabulary. It's fine. And you already answered that, but just to check, data, as you mentioned here, can be any kind of piece of information, for instance, a measurement result, a picture, or a less image, all of that can be considered data in a machine learning environment.
That's right, but you have to organize the data that, for example, you choose the picture, and you create all your machine learning with the picture. There is one methodology in machine learning they call data fusion. It's mean that can get, for example, two instruments. We can fusion this data set from the instrument A and B and put together and create the model. There are ways to do that. I think we are not doing that in this, but there is some kind of way that we can do this kind of methodology.
All right, great. Good to know. Yeah, it's important step in the project. And another question is, how advanced is the uncertainty estimation for machine learning application? Or is there any way to express the precision of classification from ML modeling?
Sure. Yeah. In general, we can do this with probability. In our case, we can say, okay, this image belongs to group with 97% of confidence.
It's something that is usual to you. I mean, is a natural outcome from a machine learning application to have this
Interval of the classification. It's like
confidence interval. Great. Yeah. All right. Okay. Thank you so much. Is there anyone who would like to make any question in comments? We are fine. Okay. In this case, I would like to ask for Gabriele from the Brazilian Society of Metrology to stop the recording.